Hey guys, wanted to just give you a quick message before the episode gets started. I'm going to cover a lot of topics that are very controversial, very upsetting in nature, but they need to be talked about. So I just wanted to give you a little heads up ahead of time and also say, because I left it to the end of the video, but the biggest thing I'm trying to accomplish here is to spread the message of what's actually happening right now in the United States of America and a lot of the things that need to change. And that message has to get out there. And after all these things that I'm talking about, it doesn't feel quite right to sit here and say, you know, share the podcast and everything like that. But without that, the message isn't going to get out there. The message isn't going to spread. And the hard work that I'm doing to try and spread that message will go to waste. So please, if you like the episode, if you agree with the opinions, or even if you disagree and want to start a conversation, you know, share this with your friends, comment, get involved. It's very necessary right now. So with that, enjoy the episode. All right. 3, 2, 1. And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the T-Hatch Podcast, where we have open and in-depth conversations about the things that you and I care about. Today, on the T-Hatch Podcast, I'm going to finally be bringing you those podcasts I have promised you about the album, breaking down all the further points, all the things that I want to talk about. And I'm going to be breaking this down song by song for you, because there is a lot that I've packed into that album, a lot that needs to be talked about, and a lot of things that we can't keep kicking the can down the road. We can't keep putting off these important conversations as individuals and as a society. The longer we do that, the worse the outcome is going to become for everybody. So I find it very important to talk about these things early, often. And unfortunately, it's not early, and it hasn't happened often, so I have to take it into my own hands to get this discussion started. So, that out the way, I'm really just gonna get right into it. I'm starting right at the top of the album with the first song, Sold. S-O-U-L-D. I spell it that way to kind of make a play on Sold Your Soul. I think you get that. That's pretty simple to get. But I'm going to be referencing my notes quite a bit in this podcast, so I apologize for not looking at the camera. Everybody listening to the audio version, it's going to be great for you as well. With the video, you do get to see me talking with my hands, being all crazy like I get. And I'm going to be addressing the camera as much as I can, but I do need to be watching my notes as we go through this. So, to start off, what I wanted to do was really break down some of the lines in the lyrics of these songs and really break down what that means. So, to start off, I want to start off with a couple lines. Approaching life is woe is me. They can't afford no grocery. How dare you be approaching me with cuts for those who have no need? So I want to break this down a little bit. What do I mean when I say that? Well, what I want to break down is essentially the dichotomy between the average everyday American who really can't afford their groceries and the fact that our government finds it fitting to give tax breaks to the top 1%, to corporations. And I wanted to break that down, give you some numbers, give you some analytical points on that. So where I wanted to start, approaching life is woe is me, they can't afford no grocery, okay? 42% of Americans currently make under $15 an hour. Just for reference, $15 an hour at a full-time job, that's $30,000 a year. I don't know about you, but that's not a great living. Yes, you are comfortable. Not necessarily even. That really only covers the bare necessities, and I actually fleshed that out in what I looked at. Because when I look at it, and we say, okay, well, we're fighting for a $15 minimum wage, or at least if you're a progressive, you're clearly fighting for that. $15 an hour, even that barely covers the necessities in some of the least expensive states in the United States of America. When you consider the most expensive states, that would be nearly 80% of your income going to necessities, that being house, rent, mortgage, whatever you have as far as housing goes, putting a roof over your head, food, transportation, getting to and from work, whether that be walking, or if you're fortunate enough to have a car, or if you need a car to get to your job, because that is the case for many Americans. So 42% of Americans are currently making under $30,000 a year. That is absurd when you think about that. Nearly half of the workforce is not making the minimum living wage, as many economists have pointed out. Many economists have done studies on the $15 minimum wage, not only what it would affect the economy, but also on the living conditions of these people and the necessary amount of money to live in the United States. That's how you come upon that $15 an hour number. When you consider 42% of Americans are making less than that, nobody is doing okay. And that's why we see massive unrest on both sides of all issues. Right-wingers are pissed off and upset because they don't have enough money, they don't have enough jobs. Left-wingers are pissed off and upset because they don't have enough money and they don't have enough jobs. This is happening in America right now. So I go on with my research to find. So $15 an hour would provide $2,400 a month pre-tax. Okay. While the cost of monthly necessities ranges from roughly $1,400 a month to $2,300 a month, keep that in mind. 42% of American workers don't make $2,400 a month gross. How much is getting taken away in your taxes? Well, my check, I don't know about yours, but I end up giving up roughly a third to at times approaching a half of my paycheck for taxes. That has changed under Trump's tax cuts, but it's still roughly a third. So I'm giving up a third of my $2,400. And then depending on where I live, it might cost me $2,300 just for the bare necessities, just to cover the bottom part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is absolutely absurd. Not only do they not have extra spending money, they literally can't afford to live. That's on $15 an hour, let alone people who are making less than that. Now, moving on, even at $15 an hour, Americans would still spend 50 to 90% of their income on necessities. So that is just breaking it down to a percentage, what I just said. Meanwhile, quote, at least 60 companies reported that their 2018 federal tax rates amounted to effectively zero or even less than zero on income earned on U.S. operations. This is according to the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, also known as ITEP. So consider this for a second. 60% of corporations are paying zero taxes or less, meaning they're getting money back, while the average everyday American can't afford to live. They can't afford the basic necessities. $7.25 an hour equates to $15,000 a year, which clearly the math doesn't add up to that being a living wage. And what is minimum wage supposed to be? It's supposed to be the minimum amount that you can pay someone for a menial job that will provide basic necessities for life. We must raise the minimum wage. Furthermore, Trump cuts the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%. So that quote on at least 60% of companies paying zero taxes or less, that's before the tax cuts. That's before there were more loopholes added. That's before they now owe less money in taxes on the money that they gain. It's simply absurd. I have an article to reference, and I will leave a link in the description of wherever you're watching this, or listening, that is. So this is from publicintegrity.org. I've got a list of companies who had an effective tax rate of less than zero. Less than zero. Amazon, Delta Airlines, Chevron, General Motors, EOG Resources, Occidental Petroleum, Honeywell International, Deere, American Electric Power, Principal Financial, First Energy, Prudential Financial, Xcel Energy, Devon Energy, DTE Energy, Halliburton, Netflix, Whirlpool, Eli Lilly, IBM, Goodyear, Penske Automotive Group, Aramark, AECOM Technology, Tech Data, Performance Food Group, Aero Electronics. This is all, again, coming from ITEP's data. So think about this. Netflix, who you pay to watch movies, they don't pay taxes. Amazon, who essentially runs the back end of the internet, who sells millions on millions of products, making billions of revenue, billions in profit, supported the richest man in the history of the world, Jeff Bezos, they don't pay taxes. This is simply absurd. I don't understand how people can't get it through their head that this is wrong. This is not how it should be. We cannot be cutting taxes for corporations who are already paying $0 in effective tax rate. We can't be cutting that while simultaneously having our citizens not be able to live, having our working class literally not be able to afford to live. Amazon treats their workers like, I pull back from saying slaves, because that is the history behind that, especially in the United States, is horrible. And I won't compare what's happening to that, because that's an atrocity. But this is nearly as close as it gets. People are working for a wage that does not pay the bills. And they're foregoing bathroom breaks to meet up with Amazon's rate that they have to pick packages off of shelves. This is not okay, and Amazon is not alone in doing these horrible practices to their employees. These corporations are profiting off of backbreaking labor from the workers, and these workers can't afford to live. It's not okay. It's not right. That's not how a system is supposed to work. It is time to wake up and understand that this is not okay, and then do the research and figure out a plan on how we can fix that. So I want to bring to you the eye-opening things on why this is not okay, why our system is so fundamentally broken currently, because this is happening right now. This is happening right now. So I want to move on a little bit further in my notes. I want to move on to another line from the song. These are going to be a couple lines from my verse in Sold. So, quote, from the song that is, only representing all the donors with the money, though, continuing, flowing out of both sides, that's the politician flow, then you're taking all the money that the corporations throw. So this is in reference to the fact that politicians in the United States today in no way represent the people or the needs of their constituents. And what I just gave you is clear evidence that the system is not working in our favor. Well, now let me get to some of the motivations behind that. Why isn't the system working in our favor? Well, the reason the system isn't working in our favor is because right now in the United States, the vast majority of politicians, regardless of party, are being paid off by corporations and billionaires in the form of campaign donations, lobbying, these crazy corporate get-togethers, dinners, where you rub elbows with other corporate elites. They're funding our politicians right now, and what we clearly see is a paper trail of donation from company X to politician Y, who then votes a certain way on issue Z that corporation X really, really is in favor of. It's all too clear. We see it every single day. We see it from all these politicians on all sides. And let me just say this. I continue referencing on, oh, whatever side, all sides. Forget the parties. It doesn't matter. It's simply ridiculous to support someone because they have an R next to their name or they have a D next to their name. It's absurd on either side. What you need to be doing
is looking at the actual issues, looking at what people are actually saying, then do some research and form your own opinion. And based on those opinions you form on the issues that are important to you, that then tells you what politician you can support because they either do or do not represent your needs and your views. That's what a representative government is supposed to do. They're supposed to hear the pulse of the people and represent that. They don't do that in America. They hear the pulse of the donor and the money that they gave them, and they represent the donor. That's why we have to get money out of politics. That is a fundamental problem that is destroying our democracy, and it could lead to the destruction of the U.S. Constitution and this government as we know it, which would be a horrible fate. That would cause so many atrocities to so many innocent people. It would be sickening. But unfortunately, that's the road we're going toward because our democracy is a sham right now. It is not a representative government. It's only representative of those with money. What is that? That's an oligarchy. We've seen that. We know what happens. They fail. They fail every time. But we're going head first into it because the people with the money and the power at the top, they're funding it. And of course, if they're funding it, well, it's got to work in their favor. They got to get a return on their investment. It's just too obvious. We can all see what's going on. We all know these politicians are corrupt. We have to stand up and do something about it. Okay. I have a lot to get through. I'm going to continue to get fired up. So if you haven't buckled up already, buckle up. All right. So referencing my notes, corporations and billionaires spend millions on campaign contributions every year. Consequently, politicians listen. And I actually wanted to cite a specific example for you that really points out how clearly these politicians listen to the donors, listen to the corporate elites, and will do anything to pander to their needs. So I actually want to cite current Democratic candidate Kamala Harris and her recent comments in regards to Medicare for All. So you may know if you've been following really any of the stories around this Democratic primary process, you can follow, there are corporate Democrats or centrists, as other people like to call them, who represent essentially Republican ideals while also trying to not be racist and xenophobic. So that's their card. Well, consequently, you see most of them, well, all of them, are heavily backed by billionaires, corporate donors, and super PACs. Then you find you've got progressives like Bernie Sanders, some cite Elizabeth Warren, however, there's a lot of details that get into that. These people are primarily funded by small dollar donors. In Bernie Sanders' case, only funded by small dollar donors who are donating, you know, these are working people, regular people like you and I, who are donating $1, $2, $5 at a time to the campaign, because he speaks for the people. Now, my thoughts and feelings on Bernie Sanders, I will set aside for another time. I'm going to focus on Kamala Harris here. So where I was getting with that is you've got the corporate Democrats, you've got the progressives. Well, you also have people who can read the room and they can see voters are really liking these progressives. They're liking what they're saying. They like Medicare for All. You look at the numbers, Medicare for All polls amazing. It's over 50%. I don't have the exact number on me and I don't have polls to reference here, so I apologize for that. But you go down the gamut of issues, you follow the rhetoric of what these people are saying. It's very clear that the American people, the voters in this Democratic primary, want progressives who are fighting for progressive ideals. Well, you find this third kind of candidate, which I kind of despise. And this kind of candidate, what they do is they will pretend to be a progressive. They will pretend to be in favor of these progressive policies. Kamala Harris is the most gross example of this. So she claims to co-sponsor Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill, which would, some say, I'll go out and say it will eliminate private insurance in favor of a single-payer healthcare system. What that means is you would no longer be paying that private tax to the billionaires of the HMO industry. So you're no longer paying those insurance premiums every month. Instead, you would pay taxes to the government, which would then go toward paying for healthcare. Now, how does that save people money? Why is that a good idea? Well, it saves people money because the government would then be the sole actor negotiating the price of buying and selling drugs, equipment, you name it, in the healthcare industry, where right now we've got an HMO that's a middleman in this case. They negotiate what things are bought at, and they can actually do a fairly good job at negotiating a low price, but they also control what these things are sold at, which they then take hundreds of times of markup on medicines that are needed for people to survive. They will die without access to these medicines, but they can raise the price of these pharmaceutical drugs for hundreds of times what they cost with no repercussions, killing millions of people without having to pay any reprimand. That's happening right now in the United States of America. Single-payer healthcare would eliminate that, because now healthcare is free at the point of service. You paid your taxes like a good citizen, unlike Amazon, unlike Verizon, unlike AT&T. You paid your taxes. So you get to walk up, show them your card, and get healthcare. Get healthy. Get what you need to survive. Healthcare is a human right. So Kamala Harris comes out and says she's in favor of that. She raises her hand on the debate stage when they say, would you get rid of your private insurance in favor of a single-payer healthcare plan? She raises her hand. Well, then she tries to skate out of it and say, oh, well, I would give up my private healthcare, but I wouldn't get rid of, private healthcare companies. So that's a logical fallacy in of its own. Well, let's take it a step further. So now reports come out of her in one of her rub elbows with corporate elites meetings. I believe it was at a Hilton. She tells them, well, as you've seen over the course of the campaign, I'm not comfortable with Bernie's Medicare for All bill. Didn't you co-sponsor it? Didn't you say you were in favor of it? Didn't you say you'd give up your private healthcare insurance in favor of a single-payer healthcare system? Okay, so that's another logical fallacy where, at this point, we don't know how Kamala Harris feels about healthcare, what her position actually is. So she reacts, and she comes out with a plan of her own. Well, what does this plan do? Instead of a four-year ramp-up into a single-payer Medicare for All system like Bernie Sanders has, she wants a 10-year period, a 10-year transition from the current rapacious middleman stealing money from everyday Americans at the cost of millions of lives every single year. She wants to keep those guys around for 10 years while we transition. Not only that, she also wants to keep them around after that. So what she would do is give Medicare for All in the form that Medicare currently is, which anybody who is on Medicare or has loved ones that are on Medicare knows, it doesn't quite cover everything. So let's take an aside for a second and say Bernie Sanders' bill. Well, if Medicare doesn't cover everything, what's going to happen? What Bernie Sanders' bill sets out to do is expand Medicare and Medicaid to cover everything. So that's going to include dental, vision, everything except for cosmetic procedures, aka plastic surgery. So first you expand that to cover everything. Then you just bring down the age brackets until you've covered everybody. That's Bernie Sanders' plan. That would take action over 4 years. Well, at the end of this 10-year transition in Kamala Harris's plan, she doesn't plan to expand what Medicaid and Medicare actually cover. So back to my example of if you know somebody with Medicare and Medicaid, a lot of them will purchase Medicare Select, which is an offering from these HMOs that covers the gaps. Well, Kamala Harris wants to bring that to everybody. So what's the point of Medicare for All if we then have to turn around and still pay a rapacious for-profit middleman to get our health care? It's simply absurd. And let's talk about the 10-year transition as well. The 10-year transition, well, what do we, let's take an example of what did we see when Obama tried to pass healthcare reform. The Republicans tried to repeal it over and over and over again for years. It's been over a decade at this point that they've been fighting what was originally Romney Care. So over the course of 10 years, that would absorb, if she implemented this on day one of her presidency, that would absorb her entire first term, if she got reelected, her entire second term, and 2 years after that. That is way too much time to give Republicans, corporations, billionaires time to get behind a movement to stop that bill, repeal it. A Republican president could get into office and immediately shut it down. It does not work. A 10-year transition would not work. People would still be dying over the course of that 10 years. It does not work. In my personal opinion, even a 4-year transition might be too slow. I think a 2-year transition would be more realistic if our goal here is to keep American citizens and people in general from dying every year because they don't have access to healthcare. That needs to change immediately because people literally are dying. So 4 years, yes, that's a hell of a lot better than 10. I would love to see it at 2. Is that actually possible? Probably not, because this would be a massive fundamental change to how we think about government and how it assists the people. However, all other major nations in the world already guarantee healthcare to their people as a human right. This has been done all across the world with all other major nations. It is clearly possible. It is clearly something that is easily manageable by all of these governments. When we saw them transition to a Medicare for All system or a single-payer healthcare system, let's say, they didn't crumble. They're still around. They're doing fine. It worked. It works. It saves lives and it saves money. Americans pay the most per capita of anybody for medical expenses. So what is the point of having this system of a rapacious middleman who supposedly negotiates for better prices, but all they do is make us pay way more than anybody? It's absurd. It needs to change. Now, how is this relevant to Kamala Harris? Well, yes, her bill stinks. She's clearly not in favor of getting rid of this rapacious for-profit middleman who is stealing billions of dollars from people every year to keep people dying. So it's bad enough to support that. Well, let's look at why. Kamala Harris's donors include from pharmaceutical companies, excuse me. Donors include Teresa Meany, the vice president of Endopharmaceuticals, a company that manufactures opioid painkillers. She gave $1,250 to the Harris campaign. Ted Love, the president and chief executive of Global Blood Therapeutics, a startup biopharmaceutical company, who gave $2,800. J. Dana Hughes, a vice president of Pfizer, I'm sure you're all familiar with Pfizer Corp, gave $250. Damian Wilmot, an executive of Vertex Pharmaceuticals, gave $1,000. Jeffrey Stein, the chief executive of Cidara Therapeutics, another drug startup, who gave $1,000. This is thanks to TheIntercept.com. So she's getting donations from the very corporations that she told she's uncomfortable about Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. She releases her own bill that promises to keep these guys around. We can see it. It's clear as day. This information is out there to be had. You just have to look for it. Please, please do yourself the favor of not taking a politician's word for it, of not taking a media pundit's word for it, of not taking my word for it. Do your own research, find out for yourself what the truth is, and decide what you're going to do about it. That's why I'm here talking to you right now, because that's what I did. So please, do it for yourself. Figure out what's going on, what's so wrong in our country right now, and do something to fix it, because if we don't do something, it will be too late. It may already be. So, moving on, pull my notes back up. So, that's what I've got for the first song sold. I'm going to check the time of the recording right now, because that went on actually about as long as I thought it would. That was about a half hour. Shout out to anybody who's still listening, still with me here. I appreciate you. I'm going to move on to the second song of the album, which is White on White. And boy, oh boy, there is a lot packed into this song. I even left out some points because there just simply isn't time to talk about them, focus on them. I'm doing all this research by myself. I'm checking my own research because I want to make sure I'm getting this right. I want to make sure that I know the correct information. One, for myself alone, to know that I know the truth. And then also, if I set out to spread a message, speak to the people, tell people why this is important, I want to know that what I'm saying is true. And that's why I am doing painstaking research to find out if this is true. And I respect anybody else who does painstaking research and disagrees with my opinion. I would love to have a conversation with you. I would love for you to point out flaws in my logic so that I can then fix them. Either I find a new piece to add to the logic that I currently have that covers that hole in logic, or I have to go back to the drawing board and redo it. And that's okay. But I'm only willing to listen if you've done that painstaking research, if you're speaking with logic and fact and have evidence behind your argument. That's what's important here. Pay attention to that as well when you're watching somebody talk about something. If you're watching a media figure, whether it's corporate or independent, make sure they know what they're talking about. If they don't have evidence behind what they're talking about, right there, that's the biggest red flag you can ever have. You have to look into it if they don't provide evidence. And even if they do, check that source. See if it's a good source. I feel like these things are obvious to say, but so many people lose that in today's world, especially where we get headlines, we're reading tweets, Facebook posts, YouTube videos, where we're getting tiny little snippets and taking that as the whole of the argument, when that's simply not the case. There is much more behind all of this, and we simply have to look, or else we're going to be blind to what's happening, and we're going to get tyrannized for it. That's really what's happening. So I want to move on to White on White, and I want to say, talking about racism, especially in the United States, it is such a contentious topic that has lots of horrible history in the United States. And for me to sit here and talk about it, I could talk for multiple podcasts, multiple hours, and still not do any justice to all the injustice, all the history that precedes where we are today. And I think it's awesome that we have Black History Month, where we all can reflect on that history, where we all can remember the slavery history of the United States, the human rights movements, the civil rights movements that happened in this country. These are very important things to remember. And me to sit here and try and espouse about this as if I am the most well-versed on race, I would be wrong. I am not the most well-versed on race. I don't think I can do justice to that topic that hasn't been done in a more fleshed out, better way. So I'm going to leave that topic, or at least for the time being, to people who are more well-versed, well-read on that topic. However, I want to approach this from a different angle, and I did want to talk about the systemic racism that still ravages our country today, and I wanted to provide some numbers behind that. And I actually found an amazing video by John Green of Vlogbrothers, who really talked about the numbers that prove systemic racism that these oppressed people have been telling us about for decades, for centuries, really. And it's sad that it's taken this long to get... I can't believe we need data to listen to people who are being oppressed. But, well, even with the data, people aren't listening. So, I mentioned that, and I will link the video down below because you should definitely watch it. But there's a lot of quick-fire facts that I'm going to give you here. So, on average, black men's prison sentences are 20% longer than white men's for comparable crimes. Black people and white people use illegal drugs at similar rates, but black people are far more likely to be arrested for drug use. Nearly four times as likely, I should add. African Americans are far more likely to be stopped and searched, although the contraband hit rate is higher among white people, meaning that per person you stop, you are more likely to find contraband on white people. Let's say, and this is anecdotal, this is not the actual number. Actually, let me pull this up. But here we go. Here we've got the actual article. I want to give you guys the actual facts here. All right. Let's see. All righty. Well, I will spare you me reading through this article. I will post the actual numbers down below, but let me give you the point in a digestible way. Essentially, that says if you stop and search 10 white people and 10 black people, you're more likely to, let's say, 4 out of those 10 white people are going to have contraband, whereas only 2 or 3 of the African Americans are going to have contraband. So that's what they mean by the hit rate. The contraband hit rate is higher among whites than it is among blacks, although blacks are stopped at a much higher rate. Let's see. Those wrongfully convicted and later exonerated by DNA evidence are disproportionately African Americans. So innocent people that are getting locked away for years on years on years in prison that are later found or later exonerated by DNA evidence, they are disproportionately black. Now, what that leads to, and this is, I must say, this is a correlation we still would have to prove causation with much further research. But this is a correlation between white people being more likely to cite DNA evidence in that initial trial, to not be convicted without DNA evidence against them. So this is the bias that is being pointed out there. Black kids are far more likely to be tried as adults and more likely to receive life sentences. So those under 18 years old. If you're African American, you're more likely to be tried as an adult. You're more likely to get a life sentence as a child than white people. Black former convicts get fewer employer callbacks than white former convicts. So what does that mean? Well, if you watch the video, John does a great job of explaining, but essentially what this means is they did a study, and I don't have the exact reference, but did a study on, they took a resume, the exact same resume. The only thing they changed on the resume was the name. I believe they had some generic names like John. I'm just going to use John and Jane because that's what's coming to the top of the mind. John on Vlogbrothers did a great job explaining it, gives the sources, everything like that. So again, I will link that down below. But let's say it's John and Jane versus Demetrius and Lakeisha. I believe those were the names they chose. So the people with the white sounding names got, I believe it was something like 30-40% more callbacks from employers than the people with the African American sounding names. So clearly pointing out employer bias. Again, these are things pointing out correlation, not necessarily causation. Further research is needed. However, you can clearly extrapolate what's going on here. Okay. Emily and Brendan. Okay, so here's the names. Yeah, Emily and Brendan are more hireable than Lakeisha and Jamal. So those are the names there. So that's citing only about half of the things that John goes over here in this video, but I think it clearly paints the picture, and definitely watch that video. It's only about 4 minutes long, so you can definitely make it through it. But it clearly points out the biases that happen on all levels of the United States, whether it be employers, whether it be the criminal justice system, whether it be police officers themselves. They're all racially biased. And this is not new. This has been happening pretty much forever in the United States. It's gross. It needs to stop. This is 2019. We're past the point where we know racism is wrong. We are past that point. But we're not past the point of racism still affecting people on a daily basis. And it's sad. It's sad. So the other point I wanted to get to here while talking about this first line, and again, that is white on white, you know that don't make it right. Focus on the races and all the racists will pick a fight. So what do I mean by that? Well, this is actually a direct reference to Donald Trump using racist rhetoric and scapegoating to move from the important issues and mask the horrible things that he's doing. This is literally tactics that Hitler used to take over Germany. It's disgusting, and people are not standing up and saying something about it. Trump is scapegoating Mexicans the exact same way that Hitler scapegoated on Jews. Now, for those who are not familiar, scapegoating is taking geopolitical economic issues and imposing them on a disenfranchised group as if that group is responsible for these issues. And people who are ignorant, not willing to research, or not willing to logically challenge anything, or maybe they're just inherently racist themselves, they get behind it. They say, yeah, Mexicans are stealing our jobs. Yeah, it's because of Mexicans that we don't have a living wage. Well, one, that's wrong. If that's genuinely what you think, either you're ignorant to research or you're just stupid. So I can't find any way to dance around that, because that's a fact. That's what it is. And this is another tactic that Trump will use. Trump will use racism or things that he knows are very controversial in his statements, in his tweets, you know, whatever it may be. He will use racism to escape from talking about the issue that's at hand. So let's bring up the example of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC. Donald Trump, obviously the infamous tweets that he put out about her, I don't have the quotes in front of me, but saying, go back to where you came from. Well, she's from New York, so there you go. Fix the issues where you came from. Yeah, she's trying to right now. But he uses that racist rhetoric to distract from the main issues that people are trying to talk about, to distract from talking and having a national rhetoric about a $15 minimum wage, trying to distract from a national conversation about Medicare for All, trying to distract about a national conversation about the atrocities that are being committed at the border. I can go on with this list and it seems to never end. But he uses these tactics to distract from the topic at hand, and AOC herself pointed this out brilliantly in front of the American people. But again, people don't listen. People don't do their research. People don't look into what Trump's saying. People don't look into what AOC is saying. People just don't. They read a headline, take it as fact, and move on with their day, which is wrong. That's not the way to do it. You're getting fed bullshit constantly, every day. And people are just drinking it up because it comes from Fox News or it comes from this reporter, that reporter. You have to look into it. So that's the main points I wanted to point out on that line there. However, continue with me on this song because there is plenty to get to. Next line I want to go over. Got to be strong, propaganda right up in our sight. So essentially what I mean here, the form of propaganda that you see in 2019 is different than the kind of propaganda that you would see in the era of Hitler. Or for example, the kind of propaganda that you see from North Korea about, you know, Kim Jong-un being so strong, their dear leader. Everything you ever see is just putting him up on a pedestal, to trying to avoid using less than savory words. So what's happening right now in the U.S. is not Supreme Leader Trump is so great at everything. That's not what's happening right now, because thankfully our people are at least a little smarter than that, at least on aggregate. However, you look at Republican supporters who currently support Trump at over 80%, they seem to drink that stuff up. They seem to drink up, oh, we're going to do it strong. America first. Oh, Trump is such a great businessman. He's not. He drove 6 companies bankrupt. Open your eyes, do a little research on Trump's business history before you call him a great businessman, because as soon as I hear the words Trump is a great businessman come out of your mouth, I know you're not doing your research. I know you're not looking into anything. So at that point, why am I going to listen to anything that you're saying? It would be a logical fallacy on my part to listen to you. So that's the crux of what I'm getting at here, is do some fucking research for yourself. And I've said that so many times on so many podcasts, but get it through your head. Do your own research. Form your own opinion based on logic and fact. It's not that hard once you actually do it. You just have to do it. So what are the tactics that are being used in the U.S.? Because clearly I just pointed out these are not the same tactics. I apologize for the audio there. But these are not the same tactics that have been used in other authoritarian governments. Well, what's happening right now is anybody in the press who says anything negative about Donald Trump faces massive pressure. So this is going to be pressure from the right wing. This is going to be pressure from the corporations and billionaires who pay for ads on their networks that pay their bills. There's massive pressure from right-wing media outlets that essentially are the voice of the Trump administration. There is massive pressure that comes. They will go as far as to... Trump has in the past already done this, remove media access for anybody who says anything unfavorable about Trump. Trump is calling them an enemy. So when Trump says somebody is an enemy of the United States, is an enemy of America, what his supporters hear is exactly that this is a public enemy. They see that that in the same way that everyone saw Saddam Hussein as a public enemy of America. So when Trump says this about somebody, it is clearly stoking hatred, xenophobia, at many times racism, and violence toward these people. People are receiving death threats because Trump calls them an enemy. It's horrible. He's doing this to anybody who says anything that disagrees with him, which anybody who's read the Constitution knows the first fucking amendment is freedom of goddamn speech. And I say it exactly like that because I have the freedom to say that. Or at least I thought I did. We'll see what happens when the Gestapo shows up in the form of ICE and raids this building, takes me away because I got a ponytail and a beard. I don't look white enough. It's fucking ridiculous. They also will apply pressure to people's family members or any allies of theirs. They will make threats not only to the actual person, but to family and friends of that person. This is sick. This is disgusting. These are things that we've seen Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini do. When your president has more in common with Stalin, Hitler, and Mussolini than with U.S. presidents of the past, you know you have a fucking problem. Trump is a fascist. Trump is an authoritarian. Trump is xenophobic. He's also ignorant. He doesn't know how to do the things he's trying to do, except for stoke xenophobia, fear, and racism. It's disgusting. What's happening right now, why is the media biased? Well, they have the same billionaire and corporate donors that the politicians have that I just went over. So you're being funded by the exact same group, and this is where I call the United States currently right now an oligarchy, because the people with money are deciding everything. They decide what message gets pushed to you by the media. They decide which way the politicians are going to vote, because they pay them off, and they can do it legally in the United States right now. That has to change. So I want to move on to another line. Inside the private prisons, they lock them up over minor sins. They're making money on them. How is this making sense? So this is shifting to another gigantic topic that I'm not even going to scratch the surface on how deep this goes. But this is clearly in reference to private prisons who are profitizing human rights violations. That's really what's happening here. So I did some research and I found that in 2015, private prisons hauled in over $629 million in profit. 1 year, $629 million. Just so you know, the revenue on that industry has been increasing at nearly an exponential rate every year, so I can only imagine what that number is going to be for 2019. One in five prisoners are locked up for a non-violent drug offense. One in five. One in five people in prison right now is simply there to put money in the pocket of the owner of that private prison. That's what they are in there for. They are in there for sometimes their entire life for possessing things as simple or as benign, somewhat benign drugs as marijuana. It's simply absurd. The fact that prisons can make profit off of keeping someone locked up is disgusting. That incentivizes people to imprison more people. As you know, if there is a profit incentive, corporations and these disgusting one percenters who don't give a shit about the average everyday person will do anything to increase their profits. Literally anything. Locking up innocent people, no problem. You want to talk about the military-industrial complex? Yeah, yeah, we're making and profiting off of the things that are killing millions of people, the HMOs, pharmaceutical companies, responsible for millions of deaths every year because there's profit motive. That's what's happening. That's why it's such a problem that we're working and living under the construct of an oligarchy in the United States. It doesn't work. Moving on. Because the system's sicker than sister who taken Vicodins. They drive him like a fisker. This fiscally isn't making sense. They sign in the initial officially on with violence. So this is going to cover multiple issues. I've got a lot of notes here. This is going to carry me to probably the end of the podcast here. I'm actually going to check the time while I'm thinking about it. Hey, what do you know? We're already almost at an hour. Buckle up. It's getting even longer. So pharmaceutical companies sell large quantities of controlled substances to distributors, I give air quotes there for anyone listening, who sell them to shady pharmacies that end up selling these drugs to people without prescriptions. So these opioid painkillers that are literally controlled substances are being sold in bulk to quote-unquote distributors who are then flipping them to pharmacies that sell them to people who have no need for that drug. Why? Because that pharmaceutical company can produce and sell more of the drug that they're profiting on. They're literally killing people. The opioid epidemic, well, it's just that. It's an epidemic. It's killing millions of people every year. They get away with it. No executives are going to get put in jail. Fines aren't being given out. They can do this right now in the United States, and it's sick and disgusting. Republicans claim to want to balance the budget. So this is moving on to a further point. Republicans claim to want to balance the budget while simultaneously passing tax cuts and budgets that increase the deficit, while also denying funding for the medical needs of 9/11 responders. So for anybody who doesn't know, the funds that were allocated by the government for 9/11 responders, the timeline on that ran out, which I would first say there should be no timeline on that. But Republicans shot that down because, well, we want to balance the budget. We don't want to add any new spending. Well, one, you're not adding spending. This has already been an expenditure for years. But you're going to cut spending on 9/11 responders? If we have any obligation, that is to support, at the very least medically, those who came to our aid on 9/11, those who have fought in our wars, protecting our freedom that the Trump administration wants to stomp all over. These people must be supported, at the very least medically, if not so much more. And they don't want to do it because we got to balance the budget, while at the same time passing tax cuts, massive tax cuts for corporations, and increasing the deficit because of it. We see through your trick. You're not here to balance a budget. You're here to give more money to your corporate buddies. That's what it is. We can clearly see it. If you do the research, you'll know that's what's happening. Moving on, and again, I'm only scratching the surface on these issues that are massive. These are gigantic problems. Please do some more research. Republicans and many Democrats stand around while families are separated. People are denied basic human rights, and people are murdered. This is all at the border that I'm referencing. They also increased funding for said atrocities at the border with no promises of improving conditions. And clearly, they have not improved conditions. We've seen that play out. I need a drink here. I am dying. Wrong time to say that. I apologize. It's horrible what's happening at the border right now. Imagine for just a second that you as a child got separated from your parents. This is simply absurd. I cannot believe that's happening in the United States of America, but we're currently separating children, toddlers, babies from their parents. We're currently caging people. The United States government is caging people. It's sick. It's disgusting. They're caged in so tight that they don't have enough room to lay down. If half of the people in that cage lay down, if you saw the video, this is the video I'm referencing, is when Mike Pence, the vice president, went to visit one of these facilities at the border. They were laying down to show them, to demonstrate that they don't have enough room to sleep. Half of them lay down, the entire floor of that cage is covered. It's sick, it's disgusting. These people are not being allowed showers, basic hygiene. They're being massively underfed. They're not given consistent access to water. This is disgusting. These are human rights violations on a US, international, any level. These are human rights violations. This is disgusting. Anybody who supports that is simply wrong. And I can't find the words to express how disgusting it is and how awful it is to be okay with this, to stand idly by while your government is supporting and doing human rights violations, and not only on the U.S. border. We're killing millions of innocent civilians all over the world. And it hardly gets talked about in the U.S. It hardly gets talked about when families are losing loved ones. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And these are the conversations that are a daily tyranny in some places of the world. The threat that they might at any second get vaporized by a bomb. And in the United States, we can't even mention how many civilians the United States just killed today. It's disgusting. It's disgusting, and I'm sad to say that I'm a U.S. citizen when these are the atrocities that are happening. I somewhat can sympathize with the bystanders of a country like Germany during the height of Hitler's reign. Because you stand back and say, what can I do? Thankfully, in the United States, we at least have the illusion of freedom of speech. So I can sit here and say this to you right now without someone knocking down my door and gunning me down. But the things that we're watching, the path that things are moving towards, it's getting to a point where that might start happening, which is incredibly scary. And I'm here standing in front of it saying something about it because something has to be said. Something has to be done. And let me just say, this is not the breadth of what I'm doing. The biggest thing that I can do is not just spread a message to everybody. The biggest thing I can do is not just help educate people on what's happening in the United States right now. It's bigger than that. This is just the beginning. You need to start somewhere as well. And it starts with that research, with looking into what people are saying. Like I said, don't trust a politician. Don't take what they're saying at face value. Don't trust a media pundit. Don't take what they're saying at face value. Don't trust independent media and take what they're saying at face value. Don't trust what I'm saying and take it at face value. Figure this out for yourself. It is incredibly vital. So, I still have more here, guys. And it's just scratching the surface. But Trump's administration also refuses to acknowledge white nationalist violence, crime, and terrorism while calling U.S. Congress people enemies. So this is some of the stuff that clearly points to what Trump is trying to do by stoking xenophobia and racism and violence to achieve political means by using fear as a political tactic. Well, who have we seen do that in the past? Authoritarian dictators, fascists, excuse me. We've seen it throughout history. And the fact that people can't see it in the United States today is sad, because we literally learn this in school. They teach us about this for a reason, so that we can see it, so that we can prevent it from happening again. However, we stand up and do nothing. We're not doing anything. There are, thankfully, people, activists out here saying something, getting out in the streets and doing something. Get out and vote. Do something. But Trump and his administration continue to ignore white nationalist violence, white nationalist mass shootings. And let's not forget the definition of terrorism. I don't have the exact definition, so I'm paraphrasing. But the definition of terrorism is committing mass murder or mass fear, using fear to push a political message. That's what terrorism is, using fear and violence to push a political message. That's exactly what white nationalists are doing. That's exactly what these fascists, xenophobes, racists are doing. There are people in the United States literally marching, chanting, "The Jews will not replace us." What the actual fuck? And nobody can stand up and recognize that that's happening? Even if you are a conservative, even if you do want to balance the budget and lower the deficit, you can't acknowledge that there are literally skinheads marching the street saying the Jews will not replace us. It's disgusting. These people committing these mass murders are literally coming out and saying that they want to mass murder Hispanics to get them out of our country because they're taking our jobs, taking our wages. That's literally coming from Trump's mouth. This is all also coming from Hitler's playbook. It's called Mein Kampf. He wrote it in prison. You can read it. It's crazy. It is absolutely insane that this is happening right now and people won't recognize it. People won't stand up and say something. If you're on the side of the authoritarian, fascist, xenophobic racist, well, one, you're on the side of someone who's committing atrocities akin to Hitler and Mussolini. But you're also, if we're to compare this to American history, well, let's take the American Revolution, where loyalists supported Great Britain and their government while they had a standing army in the United States tyrannizing the people. Well, what do you think ICE is? What do you think our militarized police are doing? They're a standing army for the government to oppress the people, to commit tyranny. That's happening in the United States right now, and it's time that we stand up and at least fucking look at it. At least ask the question for yourself. Is this wrong? It's absurd to me that we have so many ignorant, racist, xenophobic people that they support this. Not only that they won't look at it, but there are people out here supporting this. It's absurd. It's absurd. I have more, guys. I have more. Trump and Mitch McConnell refused to pass a bill to flesh out background checks and deal with the mental health issue. I use air quotes for anyone listening. That they love to hide behind. So anytime one of these mass shootings comes around, Republicans have been doing this for ages, they bring up that we have a major mental health issue in the United States. This last round, they tried to blame it on video games. You and I know video games aren't causing mass shootings. It's very clear. Is there one psychopathic person out there who stoked by the violence in video games and the feeling that they got from committing said violence, then proceeded to do those acts? to the public, I'm sure there's a case out there. Yeah. But the vast majority of these cases, they tell us why they did it, and the reason is the racist, xenophobic, white nationalist motivations. They're coming out and saying it. And we won't believe it? They're telling you from their mouth why they're doing this. It's not video games. So the camera just cut out. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up for anyone listening on the audio. This has been a interesting podcast to do. It's taken a while to record. It's taken forever to research for this, but I hope people have listened this far through. I hope somebody has, at some level, had a wake-up call to what's actually happening in the United States of America right now and how serious it is that we fix these issues now. I have more to get into on White on White. I will continue that in the next episode of the podcast. And I really appreciate everybody for listening to the podcast, for tuning in, for enjoying the album. It means a lot. It really does, especially when I'm talking about issues that are so, so vital in America today. If you made it this far in the podcast, this is a huge personal thank you. My heart goes out to you. And if you enjoy what I'm doing here, if you believe what I'm saying, if you want to see these issues taken care of and want to spread the message, the absolute best way to do that is to share this with your friends and family. Share this with everybody, because this message has to get out there. And I really hate to sit here and say share my podcast after all the things that I just talked about and all the atrocities that are happening. But that's the only way that the message is going to get out there. And that's the only way that all this work that I'm doing to try and spread this message is going to take hold, is if you guys help me spread that message. I can't do this alone. I cannot do this alone. I need your help to spread this message. So share it. Do all the things you know how to do. I don't have to sit here and tell you what it takes to get people listening to this. So with that, I'm going to let you guys get back to the rest of your day. Peace.